the right driving lyric is, God, lead me and I will follow. And, you know, over the last month, one of the things we've been trying to think about is the way in which Jesus leads us to love the other. Right? That person who is not like us, the one who's not in our tribe, that's the call that gets extended to us over and over again in the Gospels. And one of the things that gives me such hope and encouragement is that I know for so many of you, that is your heartbeat. You are trying to figure out how to do that well. But I also know, in talking with you, that you realize how hard it is, in fact, to love the other. And so one important way that we can encourage each other to press on and to follow God's lead in that way is to tell stories about ways in which we see the other being loved, ways in which there are people in this community extending hospitality and grace. And so we're going to watch a video this morning of a couple here at the Branch, Jeff and Sarah Verkijk, who about a year ago now, maybe 9 months ago, welcomed in two young Afghan men who were refugees and had just kind of aged out of the protective social structure and framework. They were no longer, as 18-year-olds, could, you know, get all the benefits. They were adults now, and so Jeff and Sarah opened their home to them. And I want you to listen to their story and be encouraged by it together. Story, isn't it? We are applauding your courage, friend, not only to do that, but to sit here today and watch yourself on video, because that's terrifying, right? So grateful for your story. And you know, what's amazing is that the Verkaik story isn't an anomaly here. And so as we see each other live this out, we have to keep sharing stories. Hey, did you hear about so-and-so? Hey, you should come over because so-and-so is helping so-and-so. Like, this is the stuff we need to talk about so we keep moving forward on this. Yeah? All right. Let's shift gears a little bit. Yesterday, we had the privilege of welcoming Tim and Paul, who are these two guys sitting over here in the front row, and they led us through about a six-hour workshop on how we pay attention to what God is doing around us already and enter into that work, how we pay attention to the places that our lives are already involved in, and again, join in the work that God's already doing there. And it was a gift to us. Now, some of you were able to be there, some of you weren't, and so what we wanted to do was to invite them back today to let all of us hear again, or maybe hear in a new way, just how we can go about this and stay faithful to this call that Jesus gives us to love neighbor. Yes? So would you help me welcome them this morning as they come on up, guys? Thanks again so much. All the way from Seattle. Well, yep, there we go. Seattle and Tacoma, to be
thank
specific.
Thank you.
I wouldn't want to. Right.
The proper way of saying that is from Tacoma and Seattle.
get the right one first.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We love being here. We love this church. We had such a wonderful day yesterday, and already I've had a chance to hear stories from so many of you. I love this story that was just offered. You are already living into your places with love and with faith and with courage. And it's just a total delight to see it. And I think the best we can do is just to come here and celebrate that and to say, let's keep going and let's live into it even deeper and let's be the body of Christ in our neighborhoods. And Tim is going to introduce our text for the day, and you'll see how it fits together. But I was reminded in the storytelling, we've been, you know, over the last 10 years, we've been all over the world really visiting neighborhoods and walking the streets and sharing meals with families and sitting in their homes. And we're doing it because we've discovered that God's up to something really spectacular and beautiful, but it is hidden from most of us. It's not the things you hear on the media. It's not even oftentimes the things that are celebrated in big pulpits. It was celebrated here today, though. But it's the small things, the small acts of faith, the small ways that we live in to our own places and our own communities with presence, right? And those stories, you know, you hear the story of this family that stepped in with faith and made a risk, and doesn't it say something to you? Doesn't it speak to your heart and say, I can live into that. I can take that risk. Those stories are so transforming, and yet the only way you get to them is if somebody's out there collecting them. Someone's out there on the streets and on the ground. And I remember being in Australia and this last year, and we'd been all over the place, and you know, speaking at different places. And I was getting worn down, and we finally came to the last stop. And there was this beautiful little group of people, many of them indigenous Aboriginal peoples. Many of them from the neighborhood, and so we're gathered around this circle, and I thought, I'm exhausted, but I would just love to hear the stories that they have, you know? And they have, in Australia, they love sayings. They have thousands of sayings. By the way, put another shrimp on the barbie, that's not one of them. So if you go there, that's not one of them. But they have all these sayings, and I was trying to be relevant to their world and culture, and so I'd insert these phrases at different times, and they'd be completely out of context, but it was a lot of fun. My favorite was stone the crows, which I still have no idea what it means, but it just sounds cool. And so I said, well, let's go around the circle, and each of you give me a saying that comes from your context and your place, and then offer what is God up to in your neighborhood or your village or your context. And so they went around the circle, and it lit up. The place lit up with story after story of people living into their places faithfully. And I was filled with faith and filled with hope and excited and, you know, ready to go home and tell all my people, don't give up. The gospel's true. People are living it out. And we get to the very end, and it was an amazing night. And this old Aboriginal woman comes up to me afterwards, and she kind of puts her arm on my shoulder, and she says, Paul, we just loved what you shared tonight. And I said, well, sister, you realize I didn't share anything. And she says, yes, that's what we loved about it. And I thought to myself, the stories from the people, it's such a beautiful and liberating thing, you know. It's such an amazing thing. And so today, you know, I got about 5 minutes to share something meaningful here. And I think the thing that comes to my mind the most is just to share a bit of a story here. My story growing up was one of complete unraveling, complete fragmentation. I live, you know, we're on the West Coast over there, which, by the way, thank you for having us hippies from the West Coast. But, you know, we went to the West Coast originally to get away from communities. We went over there to get away from all the community life and village life and the problems and the patriarchy and the different things that happen, different problems that arise in community life. We wanted to get on our own over there. And so I was raised in an environment where you're constantly on the move and on your own. So, and maybe there's some overlap here, but this is how I grew up. I had no idea what neighborhood even meant. The closest thing I had in my imagination was from watching Mr. Rogers. You know who that is? Okay. And so for me growing up, you would sleep in one place, you'd eat in one place, you go out to the restaurant in one place, you go to school in one place, you go to work in one place, you go to the soccer field in one place, and you're moving, and you're moving so fast that you never experience the life of a particular place in a particular community. And so I had no idea what that even meant. In the famous sociologist Manuel Castells, he refers to it as the space of flows. He says, we have taken, on the West Coast, we have taken, if this represented my neighborhood in downtown Tacoma, he says, we have taken our places that have histories, stories, places where you had people that you could point to. I remember my mom crying to me one day and saying, Paul, we moved so much in our life that by the time you got older, the only heroes that you could point to were the movie stars and the super athletes. And she said, when I was a kid, my parents would point me to people in the neighborhood who had lived good lives and had contributed to the place in meaningful ways. And my parents would say, follow them, you know, learn from them. And he says, you've taken those places with stories and life and history and roots, and you have unraveled them. You have moved through them. So you go to my neighborhood in downtown Tacoma, and you've got people who come in to work, and then they leave. People who come in to use the shops, and then they leave. People who go to the park, and then they leave. You got people swirling around this thing, and slowly the place unravels and turns into a space of flows. And what happens if you were to drive down Fawcett Street, right in the middle of my neighborhood, you would see two tall skyscrapers with little tiny slits for windows in the middle. And this is where old people go to become irrelevant and die. And you can have a person live here in this building for 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, whatever it might be, and not a single solitary soul will ever say to themselves or ever say to them, you belong to me and I belong to you. If you suffer, I suffer. If you experience joy, I experience joy. We are part of the same community. No, they are completely invisible because everyone is moving so quickly through this place. You could drive down Pacific Avenue, and you could see somebody here holding a sign, you know, need money, buy a beer, whatever it might be. Maybe you have something of that in your context. And that person could be there for months and months, and maybe somebody throws a few coins in the bucket, but nobody stops and says, will you join our community? Will you be a part of our life together? Will you be a known character in the life? You're here. You're part of us. My case, in my context, and I could tell you story after story of how friends, elders, people that I respect have come together to build a fabric of care in this space of flows. And now there are people who never had a name even in the community, people who never had a birth certificate, who now feel a sense of being a part of something. Well, friends, Jesus came on the scene. And Jesus' entire ministry, if you read the Gospels through the lens of all who were excluded will be included in the life of community once again. It's a shocking thing. The miracles, the sayings, the interactions, the people Jesus touches, it is always for the purpose of bringing back in those who had been excluded. So the leper's sick, right? Jesus touches them, go present yourself to the priest. Why? Because if you get a clean bill of health, you get to enter back into the community. The woman with the issue of blood comes, touches the hem of Jesus' garment. What does that mean for Jesus? Traditionally, he'd be unclean. And he'd have to exit the life of the community for a time of purification, right? What happens? Boom! She touches his garments. She becomes clean. It's a total reversal. She enters back into the life of community. The woman, the adulterers, the children. I remember in Jesus' time, children are like treated as half people, right? They weren't celebrated. They weren't like the center of the attention like they are now. They were oftentimes looked at as not human yet. And you remember, if you're old enough to have flannel graphs, this is what I remember, you know, and Jesus is standing, you know, talking to the disciples and the people, and you've got every color of child. One's on his shoulder, one's on his knee, and they're all around. And Jesus is saying, if you do not become like these little children, you can't even begin to enter the kingdom. A massive reversal. And to me, the biggest reversal on the planet was in Jesus' time, if you didn't share the same bloodline, you're out. Right? And what does Jesus do? Jesus introduces an entirely new sort of family. Two people are said to have great faith. The Gentile woman who says, even the dogs get the scraps from the table. And who else? The Roman centurion. Great is your faith, all right? Two people. Now, you think about that story, and then you think about what happens when Peter comes on the scene in the epistles, and all of a sudden, Peter is saying, slave, free, Jew, Gentile, male, female, look, we are one family. Brothers and sisters, we are one family, one body. That dividing wall between us is down. Here's what I get from it. The very core of the gospel is this coming together to be a living, loving presence in the everyday life of our communities, to be an incredible witness to that place around us, that we are those who fit together, hands, arms, legs, and feet, to be an expression of love in our communities, so that by our love for one another, what? They will know who the Father is. Maybe. Tim's going to give us legs on this.
Thanks, Paul. So here's, friends, a text from 1 Corinthians 12 that has meant a whole lot to us in our journey, and I think it's appropriate for all of you, and I think, frankly, you're already living into it really beautifully. We've seen that this weekend. This is also, I should say, this is from The Message, Eugene Peterson's paraphrase. It says, you can see easily enough how this kind of thing works by looking no further than your own body. Your body has many parts, Paul was just talking about. Limbs, organs, cells. But no matter how many parts you can name, you're still one body. It's exactly the same with Christ. By means of his Spirit, by his one Spirit, we all said goodbye to our partial and piecemeal lives. We used to each individually call our own shots, but then we entered into a large and integrated life in which he has the final say in everything. This is what we proclaimed in word and action when we were baptized. Just let that sink in for just a little bit. I would propose, friends, that amongst the swirling change happening all around us, I mean, it does sometimes feel like we are living in kind of crazy days. Maybe that's a Seattle thing. I don't know. Maybe things are quite ordered and proper. They're probably more ordered and proper in Grand Rapids than anywhere else. But it does just seem sometimes like the ground is shifting beneath our feet. There are questions that seem like are too difficult to answer, and sometimes we can, like we were singing about before, feel like we need to retreat and get back into our kind of privatized homes or our privatized church buildings. But what we've been able to see all over the country is the impulse that we see in the Gospels is just the opposite. The impulse we see in the Gospels is what we heard about this morning, is actually to move out without fear because of the love of Christ and say, how do we be the body? How do we be the church in our actual lives? Not just do our best to invite people to come to church, but what does it look like to actually be the church where we can be, in a sense, experienced in ordinary people's lives. I have a degree from the University of Wisconsin, which is kind of funny. This is kind of my story, and then we'll pause here in a little bit and turn back over to Chris. But I got a funny degree called rhetoric. You ever heard of this? Yeah, it's a weird thing to study. It's basically, you all know what rhetoric means? I'm kind of trying to use it right now. It's like the means of persuasion. I say kind of because it's a confusing thing. Well, it's also been fairly helpful in my marriage. There's a lot of kids here, and when I have a son, Lucas, who's actually 6 now. You want to see a picture of him? That's a piece of rhetoric, because if you say no, you're just mean. And so I'm going to show you. What sweet little boy. Isn't he adorable? So when Lucas was learning to speak a couple years ago, my wife and I were kind of like, you know, at the kitchen table having these conversations. And somehow we were talking about the church. And it dawned on me that I was going to kind of make a bit of a move. You know, in parenting, a lot of you are parents, there's a lot of stuff that you are kind of no-brainers. You don't want your kids to, like, bite, hit, swear. You know, these kinds of things are fairly easy. You don't have to have, like, marital negotiations between them. It's pretty united. But on this one, I was like, okay, my wife's name is Cote. Her nickname is Cote. And I was like, hey, babe, I've got, like, a proposal for you. And it means a lot to me, and I really want to do this, but I'm going to need your full buy-in. And she just kind of, like, rolled her eyes, because she's heard these things before. And I'm like, okay, so I was thinking about this the other day. You know how, you know, myself, Paul, all of us are kind of trying to give our lives to recapture and remember what it could mean to be the church in the neighborhood? And you'll recall, my love, how I studied rhetoric, and I think words create worlds. That's part of the idea, that our speech actually creates the worlds we inhabit. And so I said, here's the idea. Lucas is gaining vocabulary more and more every day. What if we train him, /manipulate, that sweet little Lucas will never say the words, for example, Mommy, Daddy, are we going to church? We would train him, slash manipulate. He would always say something like, Mommy, Daddy, are we going to the church building? Or the church service? Or the liturgy? Or something like that. That he would never be allowed. He'd be corrected right away if he ever used the idea of the word church, which is he's developing in his sweet little mind right now. Not as this beautiful building, and it is, as important as it is, but that he would begin to imagine the church is not only just people. The church is experienced more in his little mind as like this relational fabric of care in the neighborhood, kind of like aunts and uncles who are joining in God's renewal and redemption. And when he thinks of the word church, that's exactly what he would think about. So I finished with my pitch just like this. And my wife was like, that's never going to work. No, she didn't say that. She was like, we were both like, yes, this is what we have to be about. And so, friends, I want to thank you from what we've seen already that you're living into this. That my understanding is that these beautiful children in this church, and all of you who are also beautiful, Grand Rapids, are not captive. You're not captive to this kind of default idea that the good news of Jesus Christ is meant just for the four walls of a church. And the only way that people get to experience the love and grace of Christ is if we can woo them into a building like this. What I've heard from all of you in beautiful, beautiful stories like that is, no, buildings are great. Services are vital. The organization is critical. But what are we on about? What do we care about? What are we trying to be? We're trying to be that integrated body that can be seen and touched and tasted and welcomed, not just into a church building, but we can welcome people into our homes, literally. We can be welcoming them into our fabric of care. And the only way that happens is if we can figure out how to follow that text and integrate our lives under the lordship of Christ and have that be a way of life that can be seen and experienced. So basically why we're here today is to thank you for starting and journeying deeply on that path. We know it's not easy. We know it's tricky to get along with one another. We know it's very difficult to love the other, whoever that other might be. But friends, we also know, especially in today, it just feels more important than ever. Who else but the church has the story to welcome others in? Who else but the church says our big narrative is not along bloodlines, it's not along ethnic lines, it's not along what we all have in common. There is one body, one spirit, and we are all called into that, and everyone gets to play. And that is not just a religious thing where you get to come to and be a part of our club. That's an integrated way of life that God's calling us into. So thank you for being on this journey. May we all continue with faith and hope and love as we seek to be the church in the neighborhood. Thanks, friends. Chris.
We have the gift of this meal today, and it